Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Life is like a box of chocolates, someone once said. You never know what you are going to get. After four Premier League games without a win, it is 5 wins in 6 for Manchester United as they rocket. They rocket back up that Premier League table to 7th. Yes, 7th place. Their highest position in the table for 2 months. A victory over Brighton and Hove Albion today. 3-1 to the boys. Lovely, lovely stuff. And joining me in the studio, we've got Ben Senior, massive Manchester United fan for the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Ben, lovely stuff.
Oh, it's nice to be here and talk about a victory, isn't it?
Great stuff, mate. I tell you what, it's funny though, isn't it? I mean, you don't know what you're going to get with United now this season. They can be criticised, they can be lambasted, but like I said, the reality is there, 5 wins in 6.
Yeah, we're in a pretty good run of form. I mean, you take that Bournemouth defeat out of the equation and it looked pretty good. Some big games in there, drawing with Liverpool, beating Chelsea in the Cup, and now things are starting to look on the up. Can we be a bit optimistic about it? I mean, I think we can.
I think we can definitely be optimistic, especially when you consider the average age of the side as well. And that's a key stat coming out from today. 23 years and 350 days. That's the youngest side since a game against Palace back in May 2017. And spoke to a Chelsea fan, Stamford Chidge, who's on the station a lot earlier on. And he often always has a dig at United. But he did say, do you know what? I can actually see that they're trying to do something there. They're trying to do something at Man United, and whether it's going to work or not, I don't know. And whether it's going to be the slowest of slow processes, I don't know. But you can clearly see there is a plan in place. It might take some time, but it might just be starting to look like it is at least forming some sort of momentum.
Yep, and you mentioned the young team there, and I saw the stat that it's the youngest team out of anyone in the Premier League this season, that starting 11. And it's that connection, I think, that's back with the fans now, that went away a little bit in the past few seasons. But you see the young players there coming through the academy. I mean, I saw the other day that United have had an academy player in their matchday squad since, I think it's 1937. Like, how ridiculous is that?
Brilliant, isn't it?
You couldn't see another club in the Premier League or really in world football that can really match United for the way they bring through the youth. Mm. So that is a big part of this club's history. And it'll be a big part of the club going forward. So the fact that that is still ingrained there in United is good to see. And you saw it today, Brandon Williams. He looks a quality left back.
Does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And it's great that Brandon Williams is in. I fear slightly for Luke Shaw because of the fact, obviously, player of the year last season. And looks like he was really growing into that role finally. They brought Brandon Williams in. Of course, Luke Shaw out injured at the moment. Only the second player, of course, born in the noughties to represent United, to start for United in a Premier League match, I should say. Not represent, but start for United. The other one being?
Mason Greenwood, isn't it?
Correct, yep. Ben Senior. Yes, but he does look like quite a threat on the left, doesn't he? I mean, he looks composed. He looks confident. He doesn't look like, he's fearful like a deer in the headlights. He really looks like he's taken to that United shirt like a duck to water.
Yeah, you love to see it, don't you? I mean, he came in for that Chelsea game and played in that back 3/back 5, and he looked every bit of a left wing back. His tactical awareness looked spot on in that game, the job he was given to do. So, and now to slot in at left back, he just looks like he does have what it takes to bomb forward. Because I think that when you mention Luke Shaw, I'm a big fan of Luke Shaw's. I think he sometimes gets criticised unfairly in this United team, but defensively he's solid. But going forward, you just question whether he's got that extra bit. Since the injury he had, the bad injury a few years ago, I don't think he's quite been the same bombing up and down, whereas Williams seems to have that energy. And it's just nice to have options as well, because the big thing we've always said when we've been mentioning United this season is we don't have a lot of bodies, we don't have a lot of options, players that can slot in and slot out when we get injuries. So I think the fact that we're talking about a position and going, oh, this is a young player. Could he replace Luke Shaw? That is good, because we need competition for places in this United side.
Indeed, we do. And that's 6 goals in 2 games, mate. If you take the win against Partizan Belgrade into consideration, 6 goals in 2 games. I think it's the first time since March that United have done that. So they are starting to score goals now. And we'll just run through the goals, because when you saw the first from Andres Pereira, you thought, okay, he's going to get credit for that, but should he be getting credit for that? And then, of course, an own goal from Davy Proper. That one was bundled over the line, and actually the 68th own goal for United in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, the first one, I think Pereira's quite lucky that that was given,
absolutely,
given his way. But I saw that it's the first time United have scored 2 goals in the first half of a game since January. So I think that just says it all, that we really have struggled to go and put 3-4 past teams. You saw it the first game of the season against Chelsea. It's nice to do it today. You look at the game, and it was a bit of a weird game. I was watching the highlights, looking through the stats, and United didn't win the possession battle. I think we had something like 42-43% possession. You're thinking, Brian at home, but is that the style we're now going for? Counter-attacking football with Ollie. Look, we've scored 3 goals. It should have been an absolute hatful. Rashford, how he missed that chance.
Well, I mean, what are we saying about this? Because the argument is, of course, that Marcus Rashford isn't the finished article yet, that he isn't clinical enough to be that number 9 striker. Of course, he's not really a number 9 striker. I don't think he ever will be. But there is an argument that he should have had, you know, a couple more today, that in his career he should have had a few more. By the way, he's also missed a couple of spectacular efforts as well. You know, he's rocketed so many shots and free kicks off the post and bar. So on one hand, you could look at it from that perspective. But yeah, your interpretation of him missing that chance.
I mean, he should have scored it. Look, he's an attacker, whether you call him a wide forward or a centre forward, he should have scored it. But I'm not going to come on here tonight and criticise Marcus Rashford, because at the minute he's in good form. And you look at what was his birthday the other week, wasn't it? 22, is he? And you look at people in world football, the players that we all get hyped about, oh, Jadon Sancho and all this, and we get, oh, we need to be bringing them in. And Rashford get criticised a hell of a lot. But look at the games he's got under his belt. Mm. Look at the experience he's got at 22 years of age. And you see these players like Jadon Sancho, James Maddison, they'll be looking up to Marcus Rashford. But he's only a few years older than
them. It's mad, isn't it?
So I think you've got to give him credit where it's due. And he's in good form at the minute. That link up with Martial and then also Dan James coming in as well looks frightening. You show me a Premier League defence that wants to play up against them three, I think they're lying, because that pace is surely going to put fear into any opponent.
Hugely exciting, like you say. And you mentioned the possession stats there from Brighton. We had Eddie Packham from Brighton Raw on the Final Whistle show earlier, and he brought that to light. And yes, Brighton have adopted a new style under Graham Potter. They are a passing team, and yes, they were superior in possession today. But when you look at the stats, it's all very well passing the ball about. Look, we know this from United's spell under Louis van Gaal. It's all very well, you know, passing to each other and being crab-like and going back to the defence over and over again without actually penetrating the final third. And Brighton didn't really do that. Just 6 shots compared to United's 21. 11 shots for United on target. So, yes, Brighton were superior in possession, but United were far more lethal. And like you say, Daniel James on the counter-attack, frightening.
Yeah, you look at it and I think the counter-attacking football is what Ollie's obviously going for. That's the style he wants to play. Whether that's the style he wants to play with this current group of players and he sees that's the best to get out of them, or whether that's the style he wants to play long-term with United, I'm not too sure, but I don't mind that. You've looked at United in the past few years and what we've lacked, the main thing is identity. We've lacked a sort of characteristic that you go, right, that is a United side when they play on that pitch. And if at the minute that means that we play mainly counter-attacking football and we use our strengths of having fast attackers, not having many creative midfielders, but bypassing that by counter-attacking teams, and I don't think there's a problem with that, because you look at it against the big games, we seem to have formed this plan of the three at the back and the wing-backs, and it seems to work in them big games against quality opposition. And then against the lesser teams, no offence to Brighton, but they are a lesser team than Man United. Today, we seem to just go back to that counter-attacking football where we'll put more attackers on the pitch, but we won't necessarily have a tick-attacker possession-based football. But I don't have a problem with that. If we're going to play good football and we're going to score, I mean, today it should have been, like Ollie said, about 5 or 6, but if we're going to play that football and we're going to beat teams like that, then there's not a problem, and there's not a reason why we can't climb the table playing like that.
No, and you mentioned that ages there as well. We referred to that stat earlier. When you look at Martial, 23, Marcus Rashford, like you said, I think 22, Daniel James as well in his early 20s, these guys aren't the finished article yet. These guys have got a lot more football to play, but the way they're playing at the moment, full of zest, full of youthful exuberance, you'd like to think it can only get better.
Yep, and that is the only downside, you say, is inexperience. And you saw that, I think, today with the Brighton goal, is where we just switch off a little bit, and that might happen in games. But if it's a learning process and you've got to believe in the process, then we've got to go with it. We're in the position we're in it right now. I think Ollie was saying in his press conference midweek that we're not where we're going to be. We're not going to win the league this season. We're way off that, and we know that. You see the Liverpool City game today, and we'll not mention that at all, but we're way off that quality. So there's no point in thinking, oh, we're Man United, we should be up there. Yeah, we should, but it's got to be part of a process. And the thing that we've not really had is organisation and some sort of actual how we get in there. So if the plan's in place now, then you've got to believe in it. And I think you're hoping that these players can grow together, and just in the transfer market, you add that one or two player to really build on this team. So I think today it's looking positive. It's looking youthful. It's looking, like you said, full of zest.
It is looking like that. And you did just refer to that game, and we're not going to dwell on it. Of course we're not. But it was Liverpool 3, Man City 1 today. By the way, there is a crazy story that's doing the rounds on Twitter that apparently VAR wasn't active for the first half of that game, and apparently nothing was said. To be honest, I think that's complete nonsense. There's no way they would have allowed the game to go on until that was rectified. Who knows? There were a few questionable decisions, but that's not for us to discuss. What I will discuss is that Liverpool have won 11 of their first 12 Premier League games this season. They lead the table by 8 points. However, that is not the best lead at this stage of the season in Premier League history. No, my friend, that comes from Manchester United in that double winning campaign of 93-94. After 12 games of a Premier League season, they were leading the table by 9 points. We're going to finish the first section on that glorious stat. This is the Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Exhilarating attacking football. They were quick. They were so quick, the boys, and we created chances. Scored three goals, but they should have been six or seven.
That was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, of course, speaking after United's victory over Brighton and Hove Albion today at Old Trafford. Goals from Andreas Pereira, an own goal from Davy Proper. Lewis Dunk responding for Brighton, but Marcus Rashford seeing off the victory at Old Trafford to push United up to seventh in the Premier League table, their highest position for 2 months. Delighted to say that Rob Blanchett of the Bleacher Report now joins us on the line. Rob, you were at the game today. Pretty good stuff at Old Trafford.
Yeah, it was an excellent display. And I think it's actually indicative of what we've seen from United maybe over the last couple of months now.
In terms of the young squad, we've spoken about it already on the show. I know that Luke Shaw is due to come back in, but Brandon Williams, what a performance from him. Luke Shaw is going to need to really step up his game if he wants to go straight back into the side.
Oh, absolutely. I think Brandon Williams is someone who's really shone in the reserves from last season and coming into this year. And he looks ready for the first team. He's only 18, but he's a monster going forward. He really wants to get assists, and you can see the kind of motivation that he plays with. And I thought he had a fantastic game today.
Rob, it's Ben here. Just a question about the squad. You look today, United picking back up the league form, but then there's also the Europa League. Where do you think Solskjaer will have to put his priorities going into the rest of the season?
In terms of the actual squad and trying to actually find a way forward, I think they really do need still one or two signings in January just to balance things out. It's been great, I think, with the youngsters coming through and proving that they're ready to try and take a step up. But United still have a big hole, I think, in the centre of midfield. And as we saw today, the finishing is still not great. I think a number nine is still needed.
So in terms of January then, Rob, so you think he's going to need to really dip into the transfer market? And a number nine, I know that, you know, Timo Werner's been talked about, Kai Havertz, not particularly a number nine, but he's been spoken about, Mario Mandzukic, Thomas Müller, a bunch of different players linked with the club. What do you think is most likely that United will do? And of those names mentioned, do you think they would, I don't know, benefit the squad, improve the squad?
Yeah, I think Timo Werner would be the most exciting as just a name or someone coming into the league. But I think also for United, it's really where they believe they can finish. And I think if they can think they can finish in the top four, then investment in January in a striker that who would come in and obviously give multiple seasons is essential. Obviously, it's difficult to get players in January, and that's always the big problem in terms of clubs not wanting to lose their talent. But I think United, if they want to flex their muscle and they want to finish in the top four, then it's something they'll have to consider.
We talk about momentum, and sometimes the international break is a good thing for clubs. But with regards to United now, obviously that's 5 wins in the last 6. There is a break, and then it's Sheffield United away. Sheffield United, by the way, obviously in 5th spot at the moment. A very good defensive record for them. It's Aston Villa and Spurs, and of course the game with City. Do you think the international break has come at a bad time for the club?
I actually don't think so. I still think there's injuries to contend with. We saw today Scott McTominay went off, and if that's a bad twist, that could be ankle ligaments, or it could be a month. So that might be well-timed in terms of the international break for United. But we still need Paul Pogba back, I think, in terms of in that central midfield for United. And he's not quite there yet. And as we said, Luke Shaw's close as well. So there's a few players coming back, and I think that will help Ole in the weeks to come.
Rob, you mentioned Paul Pogba there. Do you see him walking straight into this United side? And if so, where do you see his position?
Well, I think when you look at the balance of how Ole is putting his tactics across now, we've seen today with Fred and McTominay sitting in front of a back four, there's still that space in midfield for someone to go and attack. And obviously Pereira did that today. He did it okay, but he certainly doesn't have the out ball that Pogba has. So I think there's this quiet kind of thinking behind United from fans hoping that Pogba comes in playing a number 10 role possibly, so he can actually open up the gaps really that are created there up front. And we've seen United on the counter attack, that's really where the strengths are at the moment, and someone like Pogba, he's a player you want to play that final ball.
Yeah, he is indeed, Rob, and part of me wants to really believe that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has got that plan in place for Paul Pogba. We don't know exactly what's going on. I'm sure you've been asked this question 100 times. I'm sure you've written about this very topic 100 times. But will he dance back into that United squad in terms of even being in a United shirt? Or will January be the time where Paul Pogba maybe says goodbye to the club?
I think Paul Pogba will leave United. I don't think he'll leave in January. So I think as far as his own kind of personal ambitions go, I think next summer would probably meet his criteria in terms of leaving for a new club. It's hard for him, you know, he obviously wants to do well at United, I think, but at the same time, if United are not ready to win titles, then that's obviously a big question for a player like himself to answer. But I think he'll come back into the team. I think the general feeling and noises coming out of United is that he's relatively happy at the moment. And I think when you've got a player of a world-class standing like Paul Pogba, you have to use him. And I think if he is fit in the weeks to come, if you can find a place for him in there, then that's important. But we've seen how well Fred's done. McTominay's done really well, obviously, before the injury today. So it's about balance, I think, more than anything. And I don't think United fans want to see Paul Pogba as a number 6 sat in front of a back four, because that's really his weakness. And he's played there quite a lot for United, even under Solskjaer, but mainly under Mourinho last year.
Rob, we mentioned transfer targets, obviously Pogba going out, and a lot's been made of United not having this director of football that's been talked about, but when you look at the signings in the summer, Wan-Bissaka, James Maguire, they all seem to have gone straight into the first team and done really well. Do you think United have the structure in place to go out and buy the players they need?
Frankly, no. I really don't think so. I think the 3 players that came in this summer were Solskjaer signings. They weren't really the kind of signings that Woodward was authorising maybe 12 months ago. Obviously Mourinho wanted Maguire, he didn't get him at the time, but United do need a director of football. The structure at board level is not there to compete with maybe say like FSG at Liverpool. It's night and day in terms of their sporting outlooks as 2 clubs. And you can see with Liverpool, they've got it right over maybe a 5 or 6 year period, and they're now in a position to win the title, and we've seen what they've done today to Man City. United might well be 2 or 3 or 4 years off even thinking about competing, but you've got to take one step at a time.
Yeah, indeed you do, Rob. It is certainly that patience. Mate, just a couple more bits and pieces before we let you go. Firstly, I've noticed quite a lot of I'm not going to say hatred, but a few bad tweets out there for Ashley Young at the moment. Of course, Brandon Williams playing today. I don't buy into the dislike of Ashley Young. Yes, he's not the player that he used to be, but he is there at United. And we know that the club have had these player ambassadors for a long time now. And he clearly, you know, links up the team quite well. He's clearly a liked man within the dressing room. He's an important player to have about the club, even if he's not playing. Do you agree with that?
I think Ashley has developed into a statesman for United. I don't think there was a role that he ever thought that he would possibly take maybe 2 or 3 or 4 years ago when he arrived at the club. But he's the kind of guy who does give direction on pitch to the younger players. The problem is his own performance levels. So for someone that plays at left-back or right-back in a week-to-week basis, he doesn't really get assists. And I think these are the kind of nuts and bolts of United statistics that we need to look at now. And I think that's maybe where the disdain for him comes on social media. Let's not pretend, you know, social media is full of this for almost every player. Every player gets it thrown back at them. And unfortunately, I think for Ashley, he's one of those players, a bit again like Jesse Lingard, picking up lots of adverse comments when they're not actually doing too much wrong. But at the same time, I think it's trying to look forward and looking at each position and seeing who can do what. And I think for Ashley, he is at the end of his cycle now at United, and I'd be surprised if he was at the club next season.
Oh, really? You do think he'll move on?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think, if you think Brandon Williams coming through and if you think Luke Shaw comes back in, we've still got Delo to come back on the right-hand side as well, and with Wan-Bissaka, and that suddenly means that there isn't a place for him even on the bench. So I can't see him at this time of his career maybe wanting to, you know, sit in the reserves for another year or two. I think he wants to play football, and he's still a Premier League player. You know, he would do a good job somewhere.
I know another player that you're a big fan of, Rob, is Axel Tuanzebe. He's obviously due to come back in as well. Victor Lindelof back in the centre of defence with Harry Maguire today. Marcus Rojo, of course, has played pretty well since he's come back in as well. But Axel, for me personally, I think he's a shoo-in. Just put him in, let him learn alongside Harry Maguire and have a really good defensive, solid defensive partnership, because, again, my personal opinion, Victor Lindelof just doesn't quite cut it at the very highest level.
Yes, I agree with you. I think, again, today was, you can see when you put Maguire and Lindelof next to each other, the big weakness there is pace between the two of them. They both can read the game. They're both excellent with the ball at their feet. But ultimately, I think United need someone who's technically very good and also has the power and pace to go along with it. And really, Axel was the perfect partner for Harry Maguire going forward. And he is 21. There's so much upside to his game in terms of his development. He could really be one of the best centre-backs in the Premier League within 2 or 3 years, I believe. And for that, he needs to start playing games. And, you know, he helped Aston Villa get promoted last season on loan. I think he can really help Manchester United over the next year or two.
Yeah, huge impact a centre-back makes, of course, especially when you look at the likes of Virgil van Dijk at Liverpool. Aymeric Laporte, of course, how much City are struggling without him. Rob, before you go, you were at the game today. The vibe, I saw you tweet about the vibe inside Old Trafford. Of course, United fans have never gone against the team wholeheartedly, but that resilience amongst the fans, the feeling that maybe things are about to upturn at Old Trafford has returned.
Yeah, I just think that the fans at Old Trafford are, there's a contentment in what is being seen. So everyone knows it's a work in progress. Everyone knows it isn't perfect. You know, it wasn't perfect today. But there's a difference in terms of the kind of volume of the fans and just the general chatter. People are happy. They're smiling. And that's not something that we saw under Mourinho. We didn't see it under Van Gaal. We certainly didn't see it under Moyes. So over that five-year period where United fans were down in the tooth, and rightfully so, I think we're just seeing this season a kind of return to maybe a kind of siege mentality. I think United fans in the Stretford End, they're loud, they're singing, you know, they're ready for battles, they're ready to take on teams. It was like that against Liverpool recently, but I think even today against Brighton, you know, the volume was good, fans are in early. That's always a really important sign when you see them in 20 minutes before kickoff rather than just coming in 1 minute before. And it's all looking good for United. I think, you know, in terms of the team's performances, they're on an upward curve. And I think fans do feel that.
Rob, great having you on today, mate. Really appreciate you coming on. Thanks a lot. I'm sure we will speak to you again.
No worries. Great. Thanks a lot.
That was Rob Blanchett of the Bleacher Report there. All looking good, he said, Ben, for Manchester United.
Yeah, and that positivity is what you like to hear. That's, I think that has been the real difference this season, where even when there has been the lows as well as the highs, you've still felt that bit of positivity and felt like, do you know what, we've got these young players, we've got the pace in the team, we're playing or trying to at least play the right type of football. So there is something to be positive about and to hang off. So I think that's good to hear.
What's the chatter like amongst you and friends? Listen, we're all in WhatsApp groups. We all speak to various people, and we have certain groups that chat nonsense about football. I know that there are a few groups I don't even look in because of the guff that is spoken about Manchester United. Genuinely ruins my day. Actually ruins football for me, I'm not going to lie to you. But you and your mates, is there a feeling of that positivity?
Yeah, I think, I mean, when you talk about WhatsApp groups, you can talk about Twitter as well. When you go on Twitter and it's all Arsenal Twitter, all, they need to give it a rest, don't they? Because you look at them and they're spending $70 million on a player like Nicolas Pepe.
An Arsenal fan to me said the other day that he was the elephant in the room. And do you know what is interesting? No one's really flagging it. If that's a £70 million signing for Manchester United, everybody's hearing about it. Miguel Almiron at Newcastle United, their record signing, I believe. Yes, he injects pace. Yes, he injects impetus. Yes, they love him because he's running up and down that box. But he was brought in to score goals and provide assists. I know it's not all about statistics on paper, and he does make an impact, but no goals and no assists. Someone needs to flag that up.
You look at it, United will always be the team that everyone compares their players to. Whether it's a keeper and it's comparing themselves to De Gea, you saw it with Liverpool fans about Alisson. Whether it's Maguire, when we signed him, everyone's like, oh yeah, but he's not. Everyone's got an opinion on it. Pogba, how many times has Pogba come in for criticism or other teams comparing their own players to Pogba? And then we talk about Rashford, Martial. But I mean, it's always been the United way, hasn't it? Was it hated, adored, but never ignored? Just how it is.
That is absolutely the one. And I had a great couple of examples on that one, actually, earlier this week. I was talking about the Son challenge on Andre Gomez. Of course, terrible there, but it looks like he's on the road to recovery. They're saying may even play this season. Highly unlikely that, but great to know that that operation went well. But I floated an unpopular opinion. Now, not for one second am I suggesting that Son went out to intentionally hurt Andre Gomez. Absolutely not. What happened was not Son's intention at all. But I did say it was a cynical challenge. It was a foul that he intended to commit just to bring him down. You know, later on in the game, that's what he intended to do. Of course, what happened afterwards, awful. Neither him nor Serge Aurier intended for that to happen. But the reaction I got wasn't a reasoned response as if to say, oh, I'm not sure I agree with you. It was like, well, what about Roy Keane then? He went out to intentionally hurt people. That's got nothing to do with this conversation. Absolutely nothing to do with it. And you find it all the time. I spoke to a Liverpool fan the other day and hadn't seen him in a while, one of my best mates. And the first thing he said to me, you lot are rubbish. Well, yeah, but you lot are top, mate. And you've got your best chance of winning the title in 30 years. But you'd rather come at me and talk about Manchester United.
And they'll still chat about it and still talk about how we're losing points or we're not quite where we should be. And it's like, concentrate on yourselves.
Yeah. Obsessed. People are obsessed with Manchester United, as are we. Of course, this is the Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport. We've got Mark Flanagan back on the line next.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
It's the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport, celebrating a 3-1 victory over Brighton. Also celebrating United scoring two first-half goals at Old Trafford in the Premier League for the first time this season as well. Also celebrating the fact that they responded to that Lewis Dunk goal by scoring just 2 minutes later to ensure victory over Brighton. And also celebrating the man that can, the midfield enforcer, that is Fred the Red. Ben, Fred, what a player.
We say it tongue-in-cheek, but we've criticised him enough on this show that I think we have to give him some praise today. That McTominay and Fred axis in midfield seems to be paying off. It looks like it's got enough to just defensively screen our back four, but also set us off going forward as well. So he looked very busy today. I think he came top of United players for tackles and for passes as well. So you've got to say that he had a good day at the office, and he looks like he's actually in good form for United, which I didn't think I'd say at the start of the season.
Well, there you go, mate. He does. I mean, he started the last four league games alongside Scott McTominay. Like you said, Paul Pogba out injured, of course. Nemanja Matic disappeared into the wilderness. Who knows where Nemanja is? And has played in the last five games across all competitions. This is a guy who wasn't in any of the four matchday squads in August. No one knew what was going on with Fred, but he's come back. And I tell you what, Mark Flanagan, our North West correspondent, joins us on the line now. Mark, we have spoken about Fred many times over the course of the past few months, mostly to mock him or bemoan his performances, but a bit of time and he's proving that he might just be the man we need in midfield.
Good evening, Matt. Good evening, Ben.
Good evening, buddy.
To be fair, I think a couple of weeks ago I did mention the fact that players who have a slow start to their career don't always turn out to be big duds, and I think we've seen him gradually improve, haven't we, bit by bit. And I think, like I said before, the relationship with him and McTominay is an important one. Central Mill is all about partnership in many respects, and I was obviously listening with interest to Rob Blanchett about the return of Pogba. I've got mixed feelings about that, actually.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
I think that could... Sorry, Matt. Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that could hinder McTominay's progress, because I think they'd want to take it similar positions, and for the long term of United, I think he's right. I think Pogba will leave in the summer, and McTominay is obviously the future.
Is that where you see Pogba's position then being, rather than the position that Pereira is currently taking?
Yeah, I do. I think I don't really see sort of Pereira as what I would call a central midfielder. I think Pogba wants to be sort of heavily involved. Pereira's more kind of a number 10. He almost plays in the same position of Firmino at Liverpool. I know Firmino's normally number 9, but Pereira takes up those positions and fills the sort of hole. And I think Pogba, as good as he is going forward, he needs the ball from deep to charge forward. And that's where he's most effective. And I think he'd want to be more involved in the game in terms of dictating play and spraying the passes in the way that McTominay does.
It's quite an extraordinary situation we find ourselves in now. And yes, just one game can make such a difference. But Paul Pogba, right? So much of the chat surrounding Paul Pogba was whether he'd stay with Manchester United. So much of the chat is whether he's happy at Manchester United. So much of the chat is that Manchester United fans want Paul Pogba to be the player that everybody wants him to be. And now, Scott McTominay and Fred have had a run of games in this side. And we're actually now looking at it, as are a lot of Man United fans as well. I know you can't purely base results widespread on Twitter, but a lot of fans now going, do you know what? Maybe we could do without Paul Pogba. Maybe he's not the answer. Maybe if Paul Pogba comes back, it's going to disrupt the flow that McTominay, that Fred, that Andreas Pereira have started to produce, Mark.
Well, absolutely. And to be fair to me, I'm not one to blow my own trumpet, Matt, as you know, but I've never thought Pogba was the answer, really. I think I've said it a couple of times on the show with you. I just think it's interesting how people's sort of memories and things shift and how we sort of remember things. It was listening to Rob, it was interesting in terms of smiles on faces, and I think it's important to put things into context. He mentioned about, you know, under Van Gaal and Mourinho that not many Man United fans were very happy, but I suspect they were quite happy when they won 9 in a row under Mourinho in 16-17 season, also beat Spurs 2-1 in the semi-final of the FA Cup coming from behind, and also beat Ajax in the Europa League final. And I just think that the bar has dropped as United fans have kind of lowered their expectations. So beating Brighton 3-1 at home is considered a fantastic result, whereas maybe 3 years ago it wouldn't have done. And I think that's obviously is an interesting conversation to have in terms of, you know, where the club is at. And I think what it was interesting, obviously Rob knows the club inside out and has been reporting on them a long time, but even he, I just felt, got sucked into that kind of that thing that everyone's smiling now. Whereas if we look back and study the history of the club in the last sort of 5 years, there have been good periods. It's not all been doom and gloom.
Just to quickly finish on the midfield aspect of things. Firstly, I can't believe they didn't take Scott McTominay off before he got injured. I know that he obviously was playing very well in the game. He's really imposing himself now as a regular first team starter for United in the middle of the park. I really, really like him, actually. But we saw in the game against Partizan midweek that he did struggle with a bit of an ankle injury, it seemed, at the time. You know, the game was won. You just felt that maybe it was worth taking him off. I know Brandon Williams was on a yellow card. So was Marcus Rashford. Maybe that's why Rojo and Greenwood came in for those two respectively. But the fact that he could be injured now is a bit of a beast. But say he was to be fit for the next game. To finish off the Pogba chat, are we not actually looking at something that could be really, really exciting with McTominay and Fred there to let Paul Pogba roam? And I know what you're saying about the fact that Paul Pogba maybe is a better player if he collects the ball deep, but I do personally feel that he's just been waiting to have that free role where you just go, right, Paul, you go in front of your bank of two and just do what you want. And if he does get that opportunity, I kind of feel like at least we might then know whether Paul Pogba can be the player at Manchester United that we all want him to be.
Yeah, actually, just thinking about it, actually, I think the other thing, obviously, they can rotate, can't they? Particularly McTominay and Pogba. I think McTominay's got pretty much everything in his game. He could play further forward, he can play further back. Attitude-wise and confidence-wise, he's got it as well. He wouldn't spit his dummy out if he was asked to play deeper and Pogba was kind of pushed forward a little bit, and he's just got all those aspects to his game. And he just plays with a bit of a smile on his face as well. He just seems to be grinning a lot, you know, with a tackle or a good pass. He does give the ball away a little bit too easily at times, but I think when he does that, he's actually looking for a killer pass. I mean, Steven Gerrard used to give the ball away for fun when he was playing for Liverpool, but that was because he was trying to play the killer pass and open up teams, and we shouldn't sort of try and knock that hope. That's sort of knocked out of McTominay's game if he's, you know, to release the likes of obviously Rashford and Martial, who were obviously great at running onto through balls. And I thought it was interesting today that obviously United got lucky with the first goal, but the really impressive thing was the way that after conceding, they didn't go into their shell and went straight back on the front foot. And we haven't seen that very much this season. I think that was the big positive out of the whole game, actually.
Mark, after today's win, we're now starting to look up the table rather than down it a bit more. And I think we're 9 points off City in fourth. And you look at that top four, there's Leicester and Chelsea in there, both of which were beat this season. Do you think United have what it takes to get into the top four at the end of the season?
Well, it's a really difficult one, isn't it? Obviously, a lot depends on what Leicester do. It's funny, I had a long chat with someone about the Leicester thing today. Are they going to be the ones who are going to drop off? I mean, it just doesn't look like it at the moment. They've got such a young, vibrant team. They've also got strength in depth as well. There's a number of players there who, people like Choudhury and Albrighton, who aren't getting a look in, who are really, really good players. So that's the big problem for United, is that the top four are all playing fantastically well, and there is a huge gap. I mean, I think the gap between fourth and fifth is the same as it is between fifth and, what, about 18th or something like that? Sorry, not 18th, 17th. Yeah, it's a big ask. And the problem with United is, if McTominay, I mean, Ollie came out after the game and said he'd had a similar problem and he was out for 8 weeks, that McTominay's going to have a scan on Monday. And if that's bad news, then, you know, he's out for 2 months, and you think, well, who's next in line? Well, it's probably Jimmy Garner with Matic out until the end of the month. Matic comes back at the end of the month, and then maybe Pogba at the start of December. And you think, you start to realise how thin the squad is.
Yeah, it is a worry, of course, a critical worry if Scott McTominay, which is incredible, again, that suddenly we turn around. And this often happens, doesn't it, that people aren't sure about players. They put in a run of good games and you go, can we live without them? Just to refer to what you were saying there, Mark, as well. Yeah, from 16th through to 5th in the Premier League, just 4 points separating West Ham in 16th and Sheffield United in 5th. Of course, Sheffield United, United's next opponents when they come back from the international break. But just to finish this section on what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said after the game, one particular quote that really got me was that he said, if we don't get confidence from this, I don't know what to tell them. And I quite like that, because it was a comprehensive victory for United to follow up that 3-0 win over Partizan Belgrade. And I also feel like it's that comment from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, almost shows confidence from himself as well.
Yeah, I think it's the goals, isn't it? he played in great United side, who scored goals for fun, and scoring three, back to back in that way is obviously the critical thing. I think that's always been his big worries. United are pretty solid defensively. We know the problems with midfield, but taking the chances. And also, I think that the fact that United had 11 shots on target, which is a massive improvement on what we've been used to. Because on another day, they take half of those and it's a five or a six. Well, I think that's what he'll be most happy with, the fact that they created opportunities. Rashford obviously missed a couple of easy chances, but I think that'll be the thing that Ollie focuses on, that you've got to be in the position to score them and you've got to be able to create them. And Brighton are a pretty good team who came on the back of some good form, and it's a big result.
Indeed it is. That is Mark Flanagan, our North West correspondent. This is the Manchester United Fan Show. We've got about 10 minutes to go.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
Agreed. Ryan Giggs is delighted. Mark Hughes with a delightful touch, and Brian Robson in the right place at the right time, ramming the ball past Gunn.
That was Manchester United's first game of the 93-94 season. Norwich City 0, Manchester United 2. Goals from Ryan Giggs and the greatest player to ever kick a football, Brian Robson, completing that victory at Carrow Road. And the reason I mentioned that, Ben, is because of the stat that I alluded to earlier on in the game. Liverpool, of course, they beat Manchester City 3-1 today. That is 11 of their first 12 Premier League games this season that they have won. They lead by 8 points. However, United, in that double winning season, of course it was a double winning season, very nearly a treble winning season, got to the final of the League Cup as well, lost out to Ron Atkinson's Aston Villa. But only that team in the history of the Premier League after 12 games have had a bigger lead. A tenuous link if ever there was one, but we'll take it because Manchester United still hold that record over Liverpool. Don't we just love it?
Matt?
Yes, Mark?
You know, in that run, do you remember the games that they didn't win? They'd played 12, won 10, drawn 1 and lost 1. Can you remember the teams? I know you're a stato genius, so I'm going to throw this at you.
Sorry, so say...
Who didn't they beat during that run?
During that run of 12 games at the start of the 93-94 season.
Come on, I know you can do this.
Oh, you're going to get me, aren't you? So, sorry, what was the run? So they won how many and drew how many and lost how many?
Won 10,
yeah.
Drew 1, lost 1.
Lost one. What? Who did they lose to?
Yeah, they lost to...
I tell
yes.
you what, they lost to Chelsea. 1-0, Gavin Peacock.
Oh, you're too good.
There we go. Yes. God, you worried me for a bit there, Mark. I tell you what, you worried me. That game in particular, of course, that was the game where Eric Cantona had that amazing effort from about the halfway line. And the ball bounced up, hit the bar, and Dimitri Kaarin collected in his hands. But yeah. Gavin Peacock, because he then did it again, didn't he, at Old Trafford?
That's right.
Yeah, but it wasn't.
And they drew 1-1 with Newcastle, was the other one.
Of course. Yeah, Andy Cole on the score sheet.
Oh, my goodness me.
4-4 Newcastle, of course, before he signed for Manchester United. Your memories of that season, Mark?
Well, do you know what? The one that really sticks out was I was fortunate enough to go to, or depending on which the way you look at it, the 3-3 at Anfield, which wow. is, in terms of atmosphere, was the most extraordinary game I've ever been to. It was the last year of the Cop. It was a night game. Man United go 3-0 up. And it's the only game of ground I've ever been to where every person in the ground was stood up after Liverpool equalised. It was an absolutely incredible atmosphere.
Yeah, that was one heck of an evening. I was actually at school. I remember that. And my teacher was a Scouser. He came in the next day and he'd recorded it on VHS and handed me the VHS and said, go on. Go home and watch that tonight. I actually distinctly remember Martin Tyler's commentary when Dennis Irwin put in the third and he said, by Manchester United standards, this is simply stunning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I always remember it as well because I think I counted 12 Turkish flags in the Cop because it was the year that Galatasaray knocked United out the Champions League.
The European, so, yeah. Welcome to hell.
I wasn't expecting to see that.
Well, Ben, you were probably slightly too young around that time, I suppose. However, someone that you do definitely remember Rio Ferdinand and now David De Gea both celebrated their birthday today. On the same day, the 7th of November, Rio Ferdinand, 41 years old. Your greatest memories of him in a United shirt?
Rio Ferdinand.
There you go.
Well, we're back on. Rio Ferdinand, I mean, what can you say about the man? He was just an absolute Rolls Royce of a defender. And growing up, I always used to like playing centre-half when I was growing up and playing football just in teams on a Saturday and a Sunday. And I'd always look up to Rio Ferdinand. He was just a player that just made defending look so, so easy. I think he's up there as the, if not one of the top defenders of the Premier League era. Because you look at it and he just had everything. He could bring it out from the back. He could start attacks, and then he'd just sweep up the defence as well. You look at it. He was that. Whilst Fergie was in his prime and we were winning back to back them three league titles in a row, and I look at Rio Ferdinand as being one of them key players. He was captain for a lot of them games. Captain in that 2008 Champions League final. That season was just incredible, and I think he was a big part of that. And then to partner him with Vidic when that clicked. That was just dreams come true.
Yeah, and it's like you said, we were speaking about it earlier on with the Maguire, Lindelof, Maguire, Rojo, you know, whatever the partnership will be. When you look at that, Ferdinand, Vidic, when you look at Stam and Johnson, when you look at Bruce and Pallister over the years, those three centre-back pairings, it makes such a difference if you want to mount a title charge and then sustain a title charge and then retain the title once you've done it.
Yeah, and it's that hunger as well to be an absolute world-class player. But to still, year in, year out, have that hunger to go and win every single medal and win leagues and win Champions Leagues. And I know you look at like the Ballon d'Or and the shortlists and all that come year in, year out of them. And that year that Fabio Cannavaro won for being a centre back. And I know at the time, I think he lifted the World Cup with Italy. But Rio Ferdinand, I think he should have been with a shoe-in for a lot of them big, big honours, because I really think he was that good of a player.
Yeah, Mark, just to come to you on this, there have of course been shouts recently about Rio taking over that football director role. We've got about 2 minutes left. So firstly, just to very quickly get your opinions on that. And then secondly, David De Gea shared his birthday, like I said, as well. He's turned 29 this week. Funnily enough, in the same week and just a couple of months after he was handed that epic contract by United, reportedly worth around $350,000 a week, United have also been linked with Andre Onana, the Ajax keeper, with around a £50 million price tag. That's nonsense, right? I mean, surely they can't be in for a goalkeeper.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever, barring what obviously just happened with De Gea. Just very quickly on Ferdinand, actually, I think the highest accolade I can give to him is he made the difficult look easy. He made it look easy, and I think that's what all the really great players do. You know, obviously never looked in trouble, and that's not an accident. And in terms of, obviously, the becoming a director of football, I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of what Rio Ferdinand knows, who his contacts are, who he knows in the game, the agents, which is what that role is all about. You need contacts, you need to have relationships. It's a job where you need to be able to pick up the phone to anybody's agent in the world and be able to know them and speak to them on a level. Does Ferdinand have that? I don't know. My suspicion is he probably doesn't, because he's not worked his way up. He's been a footballer. He's a pundit. He hasn't sort of done the hard yards in that respect. In the really good directors of football, they've spent sort of 15, 20 years doing it. Obviously, he knows a lot of people. But obviously the other thing, he's got no kind of background in it. He'd be a huge gamble, he'd be a huge risk, because he's never done it before. And can United afford to take such a big risk?
Yeah, indeed. Mark, it's been great having you on for another week. United face Sheffield United next. I'm sure we'll speak to you then. That was Mark Flanagan, our Northwest correspondent. And Ben, just to finish up on the transfers, you know, technical director, if you look at it, Wan-Bissaka, decent. Maguire, decent. Daniel James, decent. It's actually not been that bad when you consider the transfers that have come in. I'm sure we'll see you next week.
Yep.
This has been, will
do.
It's been the Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport. We will see you next week. International break.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.